former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. It is our number two of the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. I'm hanging out here in downtown Las Vegas at the Circa Resort and Casino. We had a fun first hour. If you missed it, make sure you check it out in podcast form. Just search the Lombardi Line wherever you get your podcast. We have a fun second hour on deck for you guys as well. 30 minutes from now, our senior NBA analyst here at VSiN, the one and only Jonathan Von Tobel, will be joining us to break down these game ones. We get four more game ones today to recap what we saw yesterday. Michael, Sixers probably in a little bit of trouble there. Are the Timberwolves going to go ahead and beat the Suns? A lot of people liked Phoenix heading into that series. Minnesota sent a statement to them in game one. Anthony Edwards, terrific in game one and was letting them know about it. He was letting Durant and Beal know about it. I love Edwards. I just love watching that guy play. He's got that dog mentality is what everybody talks about. He has it when you see him out there on the court there for the Minnesota Timberwolves. We'll get into all the NBA thoughts here coming up in 30 minutes with JVT, but let's start with what's on Michael's mind. And it's draft related as we're 4 days away from the first round of the NFL draft. What do you think, Michael, is the biggest storyline heading into this draft as we begin draft week officially starting tomorrow?
Well, I mean, the biggest storyline is where are these quarterbacks going to go? And obviously, you can't understate that, right? You can't understate the need for quarterbacks. You look at, you know, when you take a step back, Femi, and examine the depth charts, they tell you more than the rhetoric that's out there. You know, let's face it, there is no chance the Denver Broncos are going to go into the season with only Jarrett Stidham as a quarterback with Ben DiNucci as his backup. There's just no chance. No team leaves their hand that empty. Now, we've known since when Sean was in New Orleans for most of the time, I think it's 25 years, they've moved up in the draft, right? I mean, they've constantly tried to move up in different rounds. I mean, he does it all the time. So that tells you, or maybe he moves down. But we know based on their depth chart, they got no chance. We know based on the New England Patriots depth chart that they have to take a quarterback because, yes, they signed Jacoby Brissett. And yes, Jacoby Brissett could be a starting quarterback for a team. There's no question. However, you just can't have just one of those. You need a young quarterback you're trying to develop. So if they would have signed Brissett and someone else, you could say, okay, I got it. But they need a young quarterback to develop. So for all the talk that this is not going to occur, I think it's pretty clear it will. Now, Minnesota, we saw what they did last year. You know, they brought in a bunch of different quarterbacks, whether it's Josh Dobbs, Nick Mullins, once Cousins got hurt. But they still need one, too, even with Sam Darnold on their roster. So I think you have to go back and look at the depth charts really honestly and say, okay, where's the huge hole? Where's the huge vacuum within the team? And I think that's ultimately what we'll see as this week begins because Thursday – at some point, all the bull stops. You got to declare what you're going to do. Like Thursday, the rubber meets the road and all the conversations end.
Yeah, because it does feel like we're just kind of like going ring around the rosy here. Just like, oh, we might do this, we could do this, we could do that. It's like, all right, now it's not like it's time. Fork in the road moment. Let's go ahead and pick some players. Do you think that we're going to see 1, 2, 3, 4 quarterbacks? Because that's never happened in NFL draft history. Last year, we got 3 QBs in the first 4 rounds. Then we got none the rest of the way on Thursday. Do we see 1, 2, 3, 4 all go quarterbacks and make history Thursday night?
You know, that to me, I think it's really probable because, you know, we know Arizona wants to sell the pick. We know Arizona wants more picks. And why shouldn't they? Right. I mean, yes, Harrison's a really good player. They could pick him at 4. They could pick Neighbors at 4. Adunze, they could pick at 4, you know, and they could move down somewhere and get a receiver if they want or another player. Look, Arizona's not one player away. Mm-hmm. Right. Everybody focuses on filling team needs. When if you're in the team building business, you're just trying to acquire the most players that could help you win, regardless of their positions. I mean, I love the rhetoric that always happens this time of the year. You know, you got to take this player because you have a need, and everybody forgets that the Portland Trailblazers had Clyde Drexler and they passed Michael Jordan, even though Bob Knight told them, play Jordan at 5. What do you care? He's the best player. right? Mm-hmm. Great players find a way to play. Yet we forget that after everybody, when it's not draft season, rips the Trailblazers for going by team need, right?
Yep.
But then we all behave in team need manner during the draft. So I think you have to, especially when you're a team that's picking in the top 10 that have had bad seasons, you just got to get good players. Forget your depth chart. You just got to get good players. The New York Football Giants just need good players, whether it's a receiver, whether it's a three technique in Brian Murphy, whether it's the corner in Mitchell. They need good players. So I think we tend to focus too much on filling needs here, and I think that's where we all make mistakes in terms of handicapping the draft.
Which team in the top 10 currently, I'll say currently because there are some projected teams that could move into, whether it's Minnesota or Denver, or maybe there's a surprise team out there that's loading up to go ahead and move up and make a blockbuster trade. But which team, because we have the Bears, the Commanders, Patriots, Cardinals, Chargers, Giants, Titans, Falcons, and the Jets. Those nine teams are picking the top 10 since the Bears have pick one and number nine. But which of those teams do you have the most trouble squaring up what they might do in this top 10? Like, is there a team that you say, I just don't know what they're going to do? I haven't really heard much. Is there kind of like a mystery team here in this top 10 that's could go in any direction, just not just based on team need, but just based on you haven't really heard much about what they might try to target on Thursday?
Well, I think, you know, to me, it's been the Falcons. Everybody just automatically, and the Falcons, you got to love that they just give you Dallas Turner as if it's a fait accompli, right? And that's the best. Now, last year, everybody gave him Bijan Robinson. Everybody gave it to him. Yep. Like, it was there. Everybody said it. I kept saying, can they do this? Like, why would they do this? Why wouldn't they take Jalen Carter if he came to him? But everybody gave them that. And based on last year, that ended up being right. So everybody's giving them Dallas Turner, which always makes me worried because whenever somebody would call me up about mock drafts, I would ask them, who do you have us going with? And they would say Dallas Turner. And I say, yeah, that's probably right. Even though there's no way we were going to pick Dallas Turner, you know, just go with what everybody else is saying and it makes sense. So I think that's the one team in the top 10 that I don't have a real, you know, yes, it makes sense that Dallas Turner fills their need, but Latua is a better rusher. You know, I think Murphy's a better player as a three technique, and yet nobody wants to give them at the eighth pick in the draft when Latua was better than Tyree Wilson of Texas Tech last year that the Raiders took. Now, he's got the fusion in his neck. There's no question. You got to be concerned about that, what the doctors do there. You know, the other player I think is really beloved and because of the position, you're not sure, is Bowers, the tight end. I think everybody really likes Bowers' game. They like the way he plays. And the Chargers, for even though this is what I love about this time of the year, nobody listens to what Jim said about the offensive line, like Harbaugh. He just went on a whole dissertation about the offensive line and the importance of offensive line. And at five, people still give them a receiver. Yes, they need a receiver. They're the lowest payroll of receivers of any team in the league. They're 32nd in that area. But for me, knowing team building and knowing you're on a long-term contract, don't you want to get your lines fixed first?
You would think so. And Harbaugh said that the offensive line group is the one position group that doesn't rely on anybody else to do their job, but everyone else relies on them to get their jobs done. And he can scream it from the mountaintops that we're still going to see Marvin Harrison Jr. mock to the Chargers at five. Like, he could say,
Harbaugh's going to say, exactly.
Here's my draft card. No, it's still Harrison. We don't care what you say.
And meanwhile, the Green Bay Packers have drafted guys in the second, third, and fourth round, and they have one of the best receiving groups in the football in the league.
Yeah.
I mean, the 49ers get Kettle in the fifth round. They get Debo in the second round, right? You know, now I know they drafted Ayuk in the first round, but I mean, the team was fairly good. Look, if you go back to the teams that make mistakes in their first year, it usually comes down to they didn't address the lines or they didn't fix the quarterback. Like, to me, that's the trajectory you must be on if you're taking over a team picking in the top 10. And if you don't do that, if you do what the Raiders do and trade for a receiver when the rest of your team isn't good, you're just going to end up like the Raiders did. They're going to make mistakes and you're going to fall by the wayside.
So, because everyone's been mocking, and Tim talked about this in hour number one, Tim Murray, host of VEASAN Primetime. Check it out weekdays, 6 to 9 Eastern time. He talked about Joe Alt and the Tennessee Titans. That's been what everybody's been, because Tennessee really needs offensive line help, and Joe Alt seems to be the consensus O-line number one in this draft. Could you see Alt maybe go 5 to the Chargers if the Chargers are not able to trade down? Like, if nobody comes up and says, we're going to go up to 5 because somebody went to 4 and took the quarterbacks, now all 4 QBs went in the first 4, and here the Chargers are with all the non-quarterbacks at their disposal, could they just say, all right, let's just draft Joe Alt right here at number 5? Or do you think that they would just still try to trade down in that instance?
You know, I think they could take Fuaga. I think they could take him. I think they could take any offensive lineman, you know, Fahatui. I think they could take him. I think any offensive lineman that you thought that they liked, I think they could take, because you're not getting a left tackle at any point in the draft, right? So whether they take Alt or whether they take someone else, Latham from Alabama, it doesn't really, whoever they like and they feel like can plug and play in there, then I think they're going to take those kind of players. Those are the hard ones to get. And people say, like, if you're the Raiders, for example, and you have, if I'm Tom Telesco and you have Gardner Minshew as my starting quarterback, and you really do not have any guards on your roster, right? Dylan Parham played center. He's a better center than he is a guard. Now they signed Cody Whitehair, and they re-signed the center. You know, who's going to protect the middle of the pocket? Minshew needs to step up.
Yeah.
So people say, well, you can get guards. No, you can't. You got to get great guards, you got to draft them.
Yeah. And the interior of the offensive line is what we talk about. It's really important. Quarterbacks hate it, getting that pressure up in their grill. So you want to make sure that pocket's clean, especially for a smaller quarterback like Gardner Minshew. All right, that is the top of the draft. We'll break down the NFC North deep dive coming up next year on the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you're a football fan, you need to be subscribed to the GM Shuffle podcast. Get it wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google, wherever. Also, check it out on the DraftKings Network. It's former NFL executive Michael Lombardi giving his unfiltered opinions on all things NFL. Make sure you check it out throughout the offseason, throughout the regular season, and check it out this week, because Mondays and Thursdays we typically have our podcast. We have an NFL Draft Night special, 8 to 11 Eastern time, here on the DraftKings Network and on VSiN. It's Michael, Tim Murray, Matt Humans, myself, all four of us will be there over the course of the 3 hours, breaking down round one of the NFL draft this Thursday. Once again, 8 to 11 Eastern time. And this week in particular, what's special about the podcast, as we welcome you guys back here on the Lombardi Line, we'll have a podcast on Monday, tomorrow morning. We'll have a Wednesday preview podcast to give it a little bit of run out until the draft Thursday night. No pod Thursday. We'll have the special show Thursday night to break down the first round. And then a special Friday podcast to react to everything that we saw Thursday night in the first round. So Monday, Wednesday, Friday this week, but typically Mondays and Thursdays, still two times a week during the offseason, because there is no offseason in the National Football League. And then we'll, of course, ride into the regular season where we're really throwing 102 at the corner right there in the regular season. I can't wait. It's only April, but I already can't wait for games to actually be played. I saw that they have a line available at DraftKings, Michael, for the Brazil game, the Packers-Eagles game. Eagles favored. Like we're already, the gears are starting to turn, Michael. We're already getting into that mindset. But we got to pick some players, though, first.
Look, it's great. It's a great time of the year. And we're, this is actually week, I track it down. We're at week 11 of the offseason. And American Airlines has added a direct flight from Philadelphia to Brazil, so they get all these Eagle fans down there to watch the game in Brazil. And so, but what people don't realize about why Brazil is such an attractive venue for the Packers is because the Packers' colors are basically the Brazilian national sports organization's teams, the soccer, the volleyball, the basketball, et cetera. So their colors are there. But the Packers emblem is a soccer emblem in Brazil. And one of the most famous moments is the Hail Mary from Aaron Rodgers. The broadcaster, Marquez, made the call with an epic command that kind of linked it to Brazil. And so that's why Brazilians love the Packers so much. So even though the Eagles are going to count this as a home game, there's going to be a lot of Brazilians cheering on the Green Bay Packers for reasons unknown until now.
It's a nice break for the Green Bay Packers on the scheduling front, not having to go to the link on like some sort of Sunday night football game where everyone's just absolutely out of their minds. Instead, you get the Eagles on a neutral site, which might be rooting for you out there in Brazil. I can't wait. Friday night football.
And we get a game on Friday. I mean, so we have a Thursday night game. We haven't decided who the Chiefs are going to play. Will Hill's working on that. And then we have a Friday game, and then we'll have the Sunday, Monday. So it'll be great. I mean, what a great weekend. And we got college football on Saturday. I mean, you know, that's the best. It's the best time of the year. We're already in week 11 of the offseason. So we're getting there. I mean, we're moving along.
We are. We're trudging along. Hey, we're just matriculating the ball down the field. That's what we're trying to do here throughout the offseason here on the Lombardi Line. But let's go deep dive NFL draft on the NFC North. The Chicago Bears hold the number one overall pick. That's going to be Caleb Williams. But they also hold the ninth overall selection in this NFL draft. They at least had a lot of draft capital. Now they don't have as much after all the moves that they've made there. They traded for Keenan Allen throughout the offseason. They've really improved this roster now with a win total sitting at 8.5. Do you see the number nine pick having to be defense and getting Eberflus another piece for a defense that in the second half of last season really started to turn the corner and play really good football? Or do they try to bolster up an offense and give more toys for Caleb Williams to work with?
I mean, look, they've got Keenan Allen at 18, 19, 20 million. They got DJ Moore at 20 million at receiver. Everybody gives them a receiver at the ninth pick because that's what they have to do. They need more weapons. How about a three technique? How about Byron Murphy at there? Put him in that defensive front, right? They need that. This is something that if you understand what Eberflus does and how he plays defense, it all comes back to the front. And he's been very clear that, you know, getting Sweat was key for him because it gave him an edge rusher, but they need another edge rusher. Like if you're going to win playing the Eberflus scheme, you've got to be dominant up front. And I think they'll take the best pass rusher, whether it's a three technique at Murphy, whether it's Latua, or whether it's Dallas Turner if he makes it to them. I don't know who they might like, but I think that's where they're going. And that's where they need to go. If I were sitting in the room in Chicago, I'm like, look, like the last thing we want to do, we signed Swift. We traded for Allen. We traded for DJ Moore. Like, we got enough weapons here, right? We got enough weapons. We're going to Caleb should be okay. We need to fix the defense. And the best way to help Caleb is to be a good defensive team, especially rushing the passer, which Murphy would give them. And they don't have a really true great three technique on this team. Andre Billings, who they signed from Vegas. They've got Dexter from Florida, who they drafted in the second round last year. But that's it. You put Murphy on this front next to Sweat, all of a sudden you got a really good team. I just love how everybody just wants to give him another receiver as if they're the greatest defensive team in football.
You know, receiver's always the answer for a lot of people's questions. Is just, hey, just get
every
another,
answer.
Just get
yeah,
another
exactly,
receiver.
Every answer.
Just get another receiver. Is there a case to be made for maybe bolstering the offensive line? If there's an offensive lineman that they like, then maybe there's a I know they went Darnell Wright at tackle a year ago, but do they want to try to make that a strength, like strengthening a group that is – they've done a lot to sort of try to improve it over the last couple of years, but how about maybe bolstering the O-line and protecting Caleb Williams?
Well, look, they start Braxton Jones at left tackle, fifth-round pick in 22, right? So there's no question you can up there. The kid they drafted in 21 that Ryan Pace drafted in 21, Jenkins – you know, they expected him to be the starting left tackle. That hasn't worked out. Last year, they drafted Wright to be the left tackle. They've moved him over to right tackle. So clearly, left tackle is a position of need. And if there's one there, I could see him easily taking that. To me, the decision for Chicago is offensive or defensive line.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it's going to be to win the game. And you could make the case they need a left tackle. You could make they need a three technique. They need a defensive end. And if they do that, you know, if they do that, then all of a sudden they become a better defensive team.
What about the Minnesota Vikings, who currently have a win total of 6.5? They have two picks, number 11 and number 23, after they made the trade with the Houston Texans. So they have ammunition to move up. But in the instance that they're not able to move up, do they just sit back and take one of these quarterbacks at 11? I mean, they seem to have quite a bit of needs, but they also have a roster that I don't think is as bad as a win total of 6.5 would imply.
Well, that's true, and I think, but they need a corner desperately, right? I mean, they signed Greenard to replace the Danielle Hunter that went to. They just kind of switch guys, right? They need an edge player. If there was an edge player there to go along with Greenard, I could see Brian Flores stamping his feet. But they need another corner to go along with Brian Murphy, who they signed from Arizona last year. You know, they drafted Evans in the fourth round in 22. That's not quite the same. You know, they signed Shaq Griffin from Carolina to be another corner to give them some depth, but they need a corner badly. And I can't imagine that Brian's not watched Mitchell and said, man, that's my guy. Or Wiggins. You know, I think that would be the case. I think to me, which is interesting, is there's very limited defensive talent in terms of depth of first round level. And yet everybody has taken everybody, and there's a lot more receivers that you can get in the second and third round, but everybody's taken receivers early and passing on defensive players. Well, if Minnesota passes on a defensive player and they don't take the quarterback, they're not getting one in the second round that's going to come in and plug and play. But if they took Mitchell at 11, let's say they don't trade up, they're going to get a starting corner. If they took Latua at 11, they're going to get a starting rusher. Or they took Murphy, they're going to get a starting three technique. Like, I don't know how they avoid that.
Yeah. I mean, it's simple, supply and demand, isn't it? Just economics of, hey, there's not a whole lot of these high-end defensive guys. Like, we need to take one now, or we're not getting one at all until maybe on Saturday, where we get some of those guys who are special teams, maybe potentially could turn into starters. So maybe that pushes up some of these defensive guys, and the offensive guys get pushed down a little bit to the back half of the first round there. The Vikings, though, really, really interesting. I think that's the team that everybody has circled as at some point between now and Thursday night is going to do something trade-wise that we'll see here in this NFL draft, locked and loaded with those two first-round picks. The Green Bay Packers, they picked 25th overall. The Detroit Lions picked 29th after going to the NFC title game last year. Both of those teams, win total set at 10.5. What do they need to sort of take that next step and get to that tier of the San Francisco 49ers and ultimately contend to go to a Super Bowl?
You know, Green Bay, quickly, I think they could take a corner. Obviously, Stokes hasn't been the answer for them. It'll drive Big Daddy crazy if they take another corner, which I love to death. They could take a rusher. You know, I think offensively they're really good. Their offensive line can pass protect. I don't think they have many needs there. I really don't. You know, and Detroit's the same way. I think at Detroit it's defensive line and corner. I mean, those are the two things that they've tried to improve on. They've improved their defensive tackle position in the offseason this year. You know, what they signed DJ Reader, that gives them help. They signed Marcus Davenport, which may give them help, right? Mm-hmm. They traded for Carlton Davis. They signed Amik Robinson from the Raiders. They need a corner. I think if they could get a corner, but if they get a rusher to go along with Hutchinson, wow, watch out.
Yeah, the Lions, you got to like what they've done. They've built both sides of the trenches. They made that a premium for them, and it's resulted in a lot of wins over the last couple of years there. They were on the doorstep of going to the Super Bowl just a year ago. All right, that does it for the NFL draft. We'll talk some NBA playoffs on the other side, because our buddy, NBA senior analyst Jonathan Von Tobel, joins us next here on the Lombardi Line to recap what we saw yesterday and to set the table for the four game ones later on today. This is the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
For a limited time, we're offering 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits for free. Just sign up at VSiN.com/splits. The VSiN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes. You can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Take advantage of this limited time offer. Visit VSiN.com/splits to claim your free 2 week access to VSiN's betting splits. This is the Lombardi Line here on a Sunday morning, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi, and joining us on the Progressive Guest Line, it's our VSiN senior NBA analyst, Jonathan Von Tobel. JVT, good morning. What up? How we doing? Before we get into today's action, what was your biggest takeaway from the four game ones we saw yesterday, where chalk prevailed? All the favorites went ahead and won and covered.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the takeaway, but it's not so much the chalk, Femi. It's these home teams, right? So all four teams favored at home. All four home teams take care of business. They win, they cover. And, you know, I just tweeted this out where if you go back since 2010, guys, there's a large sample size of data that tells us home court advantage should be worth at about 4 points in the postseason. It's much different than what we have seen up to this point right now. In fact, if you look like last year, for example, Average net rating in non-garbage time last season in the regular season was 2.7. It went up to 4.3 in the postseason. The year before that, 1.9 in the regular season, 4.7 in the postseason. You can go on and on. So I think what's really interesting is as we get into today, where we have two dogs at home due to some injuries, should we account for home court a little bit more here? Because the larger set of data would tell us home court means worth or is worth more, excuse me. And we have four home teams take care of business yesterday and win by margin. And I think that's going to be something that we just have to adjust for now as we move forward.
When you watched the Lakers play yesterday and, you know, the minutes that they had D'Anthony Davis play 45, LeBron plays 41, it's just not sustainable. Now, look, I know they're going to tell you Austin Reeves didn't play well and, you know, they didn't shoot well as a team. D'Angelo Russell was horrendous in his shooting. But is there any hope that they can cut down the minutes and still be able to win a game or two here?
I mean, I think they can win a game or two, Michael, only because, like, you would think that you're just going to have a better shooting performance in general, too, right? Like, you look at it, they were 7 of 28 from three-point range, and they are a better shooting team than that. It's been one of the improvements that they have made. So, like, just that in general, you're going to be a little bit more competitive. And I thought, Michael, I just rewatched this game this morning before I hopped on with you guys. You kind of really saw in the second half some of that fatigue start to kick in, right? You're playing in altitude. It's a little bit more intense. We saw that transpire for the Nuggets all throughout the postseason last year. And in fact, if you go back to that Sun series last year, one of the big things was they romped them in second halves of those games because they were trying to play with pace and they just couldn't really keep up. And you kind of saw that too. The Lakers do want to play with a little bit more pace, although they played at Denver's pace yesterday, only 92 possessions. So I think that when you look at it, you can probably just by some simple regression get a little bit better. But I'll say this, like in that first half, the Nuggets were not hitting open three-point shots. And in the second half, I don't know what Darvin Ham's doing with some of his rotations, Michael, but also like the Rui Hachimura on Nikola Jokic thing just doesn't work. You know, like they're going after him in every single pick and roll. They're getting stuff out of it. You know, they're either getting Aaron Gordon in the dunker spot or Jokic is working Hachimura or Jamal Murray's able to work out of it. Like they just don't really have an answer for it. And I thought Michael Malone said it perfectly yesterday. He said something along the lines of, and I'm paraphrasing, we've played them three times. Nothing has changed. Like they know exactly what they want to do here against this Lakers team. And I think ultimately you just kind of fall short over the course of a best of seven. I think maybe you get to five or six, but I think the end result is everything we expected.
Yeah, I think one thing to keep in mind with these Lakers fourth quarters, we saw it in the play-in game against New Orleans and last night, LeBron in the fourth quarter starts to run out of gas a little bit. And once he runs out of gas, the wheels start to fall off for this Lakers team. We're hanging out with Jonathan Von Tobel here on the Progressive Guest Line. JVT, our senior NBA analyst, talking NBA playoffs with us here on the Lombardi Line. All right, let's go to the other LA team, the Clippers. JVT, your team, they're a home dog. You mentioned it, home court advantage. Should we be putting more into the market with home court advantage? Feels like everyone's written off the Clippers. They've played a lot of games without Kawhi Leonard. Is this too big of a move now that they're catching three at home against a trendy Dallas Mavericks team?
Yeah, I would say so. I think we've reached the point where it's worth buying back here on Los Angeles. And guys, go back 2 weeks ago. You know, the Clippers without Kawhi Leonard played Denver. They didn't have Jamal Murray. They were catching this exact same number. So, like, this gives you an idea of where we are at with Dallas from a power rating standpoint. And then keep in mind, too, as we've talked about, home court is worth more. So you can make the argument, like, this Dallas Mavericks power rating is really, like, insanely high at this point right now. And a quick little swing back to Dallas, guys, to give you an idea. We're talking about maybe Dallas laying 11 at home against the Los Angeles Clippers. Like, it seems like we're a little too far out here at this point. Femi, you mentioned it. They have played a lot without Kawhi Leonard. Paul George quietly down the stretch had been playing very good basketball, 25-5 on 50% shooting, both from the floor and from three-point range. They still have James Harden. They have good depth of the backcourt. Like, there are still things to like. There are things that they can exploit here in this matchup. I understand if you like Dallas, but when we're talking about minus 185 for this series or catching three at home in a playoff setting, I just think we're at the point where it's worth buying back here. We've seen a little bit of it, right? Some of these threes are starting to disappear where we're starting to see those 2.5s pop back up. I think we probably close like 2.5, 2 by the time we get to game time. Well, and we'll end up seeing what happens with Kawhi Leonard. I doubt he's going to play, but they're still leaving that door open. But to me, this is just buying back here on what we've gotten to in terms of an extreme swing in one direction. I haven't talked to a single person, literally, not talked to a single person that gives the Clippers a chance in this series or in this game.
Yeah, it's amazing how it just goes one-sided. The momentum builds. How about the number on the Thunder Pelican games is -8.5. What's your sense? I know it's hard to trust the injury reports of the NBA. Is Zion going to play? They say it's not as bad, but you never really know. Is that line reflected in him not playing or believing he could play?
Oh, no, he's out. This line reflects that, Michael. So, yeah, we're sitting at, we got the floor here is like 7.5. We saw the market move up to 8.5. 8.5 is the ceiling. So whenever you touch that, you'll probably get some buyback here and there. So we'll probably close right here at 8. But this is a Zion-less number here for the New Orleans Pelicans. And I think you're a little bit worried. Like, you did show out against, the Sacramento Kings in your play-in. You were brilliant in that regard. But Oklahoma City is a different animal, right? They are a very good defensive team. They are well schemed. Obviously, Mark Dagnold in the running and probably will win Coach of the Year here. They've got some versatility, and you don't have the overwhelming size. You got good size, but without Zion Williamson, you don't have the overwhelming size to really exploit some of the weaknesses for Oklahoma City. It's why a lot of people thought the Lakers should have tanked the game, right, to get into this bracket, because their size up front would have been a problem. That's not going to be the case here. You can kind of play Valanciunas off the floor. He's not a true post threat. You can go after him too. And Shea's going to pick after every single little mismatch out there, including going after CJ McCollum on every single possession. I think that you're going to see that this Thunder team, like if this dips back to 7.5, I think that's the playable number. But with big numbers like this, Michael, in game, if the Pelicans come out and hit like 2 threes, you know what I mean? They go up like 9-4 or 10 or 12-2, whatever it is, you're going to get a much cheaper number on Oklahoma City in game. And I think that's the best way to do it.
We got a few minutes left, and it looks like the favorite has flipped back to the Milwaukee Bucks here at Circa, where I'm sitting, JVT. Bucks now laying one. Some other spots have the Bucks catching one. I'm seeing pick in some other places as well. Without Giannis, I mean, it's a Doc Rivers team in the playoffs. So I don't know if you really want to trust them, but it does feel like Indiana, it's a little bit too much credit for a team that, yeah, Carlisle's a good coach, but outside of him, there's not a whole lot of playoff experience on that Pacers team.
Yeah, and so I bought back a little bit on small dog price on the money line with Milwaukee here. And look, guys, I think, again, it's similar to this Clippers Mavericks thing, right? Like, I understand moving in one direction because of what is happening with the injury to Giannis Antetokounmpo. But at some point, we also have to factor in that this is an Indiana team that, even with Pascal Siakam, is 22nd in non-garbage time defensive efficiency, does not have like elite perimeter defenders to handle a guy like Damian Lillard, has slowed their pace down and has not been as effective in transition since acquiring Pascal Siakam, plays out of the post a little bit more because that's what Siakam likes to do. And these two teams, the guys, they have not met since January. The last time they met, Adrian Griffin was head coach and Siakam was a Toronto Raptor. Like, these are two different teams than what transpired. And the biggest thing for me, Femi, since Tyrese Haliburton has gone down, remember he missed that time with that really brutal hamstring injury that he suffered. Before that, he was averaging 24 points on 42% shooting from three-point range. Guys, he's averaging 17 on 32% three-point shooting since the injury. He has not been the same guy. I think that that's worth kind of coming back here. And again, going back to the point, home court advantage is worth a little bit more here in the postseason. And to make Indiana a road favorite against Milwaukee, given still what they have, I'm going to take the chance, roll the dice, bet him a little bit on a small money line dog price here.
Would you like to have back your thinking that the 76ers could be the dark horse in the East? Embiid's won five playoff games. Five, JVT, yeah. Five. All in the first round. Five playoff games all in the first round.
Yeah, that was bad. But I mean,
would you like to have a cut?
I mean, Michael, real quick, though, like we talked about, who's going to be your second option, right? Like, it was more like by default that the 76ers would be like the second option in the Eastern Conference. But looks like it might be the Knicks. The Knicks looked brilliant yesterday. They look balanced. They're very good on the defensive end. They're very sound, well coached. That was a really poor showing defensively for Philadelphia. I was really surprised. The defensive rating of like 120 against the New York Knicks yesterday. That was pretty shocking. And as you mentioned, Embiid does not look healthy.
The Mecca was rocking yesterday, JVT. I know you're a big fan of MSG and the atmosphere out there at the
five playoff the wins, guys. Five playoff wins in his career. Five.
Yeah, that play felt like a microcosm of the Embiid experience there. Getting hurt
looked
on
good
a remarkable
in the first quarter, though. Looked good in the first quarter.
Yeah, he did.
Of course, he's exhausted by the second.
He is Jonathan Von Tobel. Thanks for joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. JVT, good luck with the bets, man. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
Good stuff there from JVT. We'll wrap things up on the other side. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code VSIN. New customers bet $5 to get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code VSIN. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Welcome back. This is the final segment of the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Thank you to Jonathan Von Tobel, our VSIN senior NBA analyst, joined us in the last segment there. Good stuff from JVT on these NBA playoffs. A game we didn't get to with JVT, Michael, though, is this Miami Heat-Boston Celtics game. Game one tips off in a little over an hour, a rematch of last year's Eastern Conference Finals. And I think from a Boston standpoint, I'm curious to ask you this question because you've been a part of organizations that have had lofty expectations, like where it's, hey, New England Patriots, Super Bowl or bust. That's the case for the Boston Celtics. They don't have the history of the winning with this iteration of the Celtics. But right now, you look at the betting markets, they're the overwhelming favorite to win the title and a very prohibitive favorite to win the Eastern Conference. Now they're going to start this journey a little bit later on this afternoon. How do these organizations kind of go about that of, hey, just taking it, quote unquote, one game at a time, even though expectations are we have to make the finals or this year was a complete and utter failure?
Well, I think it starts with Brad Stevens, right? And him being the president of the team, his whole mantra in terms of how he's wanted to construct the Celtics has been predicated on, we need players that have competitive endurance and competitive character. And so when you have that as the core of your team, I think ultimately you're really not focused on the final prize. You're focused on the next game. And I think this is going to be what we see. Now, could Boston come out and not shoot well and start slow? Yeah, I could see that. But at the end of the day, Boston has way more talent. This Miami team minus Jimmy Butler isn't the same Miami team that we watched last year. You know, they had a lot of players that contributed. Max Sturgis got the big contract to go to Cleveland. He was helpful in a lot of the games that got them to beat Boston in the first round last year. So the fact that Boston was struggled last year, I think entices Miami, entices Boston, knowing Miami represented the East last year. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to have that issue. I really don't. And I think the line's reflective of that. I really do. I mean, Miami, I was surprised that Chicago played as poorly as they did the other night. I'll be honest with you. But that's Miami. Miami's a tough-minded, you know, grind it out, going to play as hard as they can. But it's going to come, and they can win a game, but it's going to come down to can they win four against this Boston team? And there's just no way.
Yeah, I don't see it either. And like the series prices, I mean, it's like minus 2,000 or 20,000, something absurd for the Boston Celtics to go ahead and advance past the series. In fact, in terms of the series exact score, Boston in a sweep is the favorite outcome. I believe that's in like the plus 105 range. And you want to give a lot of respect to the Miami Heat and that organization, Heat culture. Like, they are very tough-minded, like you said. But I just don't know if they have the horses in this matchup here. Like, without Jimmy Butler, yeah. And it's a different, like you mentioned, a different kind of it's a different team than what we saw last year. It just, I don't see this being competitive.
Yeah, like JVT wrote about on the website, you know, he talked about how they could maybe play zone, try to slow the game down. But those kind of maneuvers only work for a little bit, right? And Spoelstra will do a tremendous job of coaching, right, of coaching and game planning. I mean, there's no question. But I think if Butler doesn't get hurt against Philly, Philly would be playing in this series, you know. And so losing Butler and then Butler trying to come back and play – I don't think we'll see Butler this entire series, which is why I think the 4-0 sweep is where the obvious money's going.
Yeah, plus 105 for the Celtics to sweep, plus 180 for this to be Celtics in five. Boston odds on favorites to win the Eastern Conference with what they were able to do in the regular season, winning 64 games.
I think JVT's right. I think the Knicks are the only real competition, and everybody's worried about they don't have Julius Randle, but I think they actually play better. As you said before we came on the air, Randle can a little be the black hole. The ball sticks there. He's like Tobias Harris. You know, when I watch Tobias Harris dribble the ball up the court, I'm like, well, there ain't no passes coming. This guy's going in. This is back when, you know, he's going to shoot it. So I think they play better as a team. And so – the way Mitchell Robinson played, you know, the other night against Embiid and was physical with them. I mean, they've got 10 fouls. I think that's the only team that could give Boston some trouble, especially when they shoot as well as they did as well as they did last night against Philadelphia. Milwaukee without Giannis and Doc, I mean, I don't know how. They're two games below 500 the second half of the season, even with them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not exactly going to make you feel like comfortable with it. I think the West, as we've been saying all along, have all the good have the better teams. And it's going to be interesting today. We get to see the Thunder in a game they should win. Mm-hmm. You know, we saw the young Timberwolves play really well last time. You know, and so that's going to be the fun thing to do. Can this young Thunder team match what the Timberwolves did? I thought the Timberwolves were outstanding. I know we haven't talked enough about it. I thought Rudy Gobert was sensational. Gobert, he was sensational. I thought he dominated the game inside out. And, you know, it looked like Phoenix was running out of gas.
Yeah, Phoenix, I mean, they're relying on their big three of Durant, Booker, and Beal. Durant came to play 11 of 17 from the field, 31 points, but they're going to need a little bit more from Booker. He was 5 of 16. You would expect to get better from Booker. He's been a guy that's played well in the playoffs, well, and then Beal only shot 10 shots.
They did a good job on him defensively. I think this whole concept, if you're an NBA general manager, this whole concept of getting three players and then trying to fill in, I just don't see how it works. You know, depth matters. It, especially when you're the Lakers and you have guys 39 years old playing 41 minutes and, you know, or 40, you know, that's a hard thing to do. You need depth, like football teams. I mean, we all get, like, for example, we all get so excited about some of these teams that have great players, but they have no depth. And I think that's really what's going to manifest itself when you have so much money tied up in the cap on one guy. I mean, Minnesota has lived this, right? And it didn't work for them. I think Dallas is going to be the perfect example this year. You could say on paper, yeah, Dallas has got Dak, they got CeeDee Lamb, they got Micah Parsons. They're really good. But you know, if they don't get depth at some other places, I think it's going to be really challenging for them. And that's where the NBA shows us.
The Metroplex has been trying to distract themselves with the Mavericks and the Stars and not paying attention to what the Cowboys are doing because it's not been a fun off season for Cowboys fans, but we'll see. The championships are not won in the offseason. I guess you got to ultimately win it in the fall and the wintertime a little bit later on this year. But the Mavericks, everyone loves this team. I mean, you watch Luka Doncic, it's hard not to love him. He's a terrific player. Kyrie Irving, he's been focused this year, so he's provided to be like a really nice sidekick for this Dallas team. But at some point, like JVT was saying in the last segment, at some point it's a little too much. And now minus 185 to win this series, where Dallas, yeah, Luka's had really good games against the Clippers, but the Ty Lue's still a really good coach. They still have Paul George. I mean, James Harden in the playoffs, yeah, he probably leaves a lot to be desired there, but they're still capable players on this Clippers team that has home court advantage, but they're being written off as if they have no chance to win the series.
Well, I mean, look, and the reason they are is because when you look at the numbers after P.J. Washington arrived and Daniel Gafford from the Washington team, you know, this team has been 21-8 over that stretch. They've been third best in efficiency differential in the NBA, and their defense has been one of the best defensive teams in the league over the last 15 games. So this isn't just we think. This isn't, oh, Embiid's back, the Sixers will win. This is like based on legitimate numbers. And I think that you have to like that. Now, look, the Clippers, if Kawhi plays, the Clippers are going to be in for a hard time. But I think you got to give – you really have to give a lot of credit to the Mavericks and their ability to kind of reinvent their team at the trading deadline. And yeah. Jason Kidd's done a tremendous job of challenging the players on the team to rise above. And when you have one of the best players in the league and he plays – like one of the best players in the league. And then you have Kyrie Irving, who is one of the best. I mean, look, they're not a team devoid of players. They have two legitimate stars on that team, and they have good role players that understand their role.
Yeah, Luka Doncic, he's played his best games in the playoffs, and a lot of them have come against this Clippers with Kawhi Leonard. Now, no Kawhi Leonard for game one. We are assuming no Kawhi Leonard, and we'll see what happens the remainder of the series. But I wouldn't really be holding my breath for Kawhi Leonard to return if I was a Clippers fan or Clippers better, given his injury history with the knee. Like they said, the swelling hasn't gone down. So, I mean, I don't know what to tell you on that front there, other than.
I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, like, well, I like Kendrick Perkins said the 76ers should save Joel Embiid and rest him for the rest. Like, what are we resting him for? Like, what are you waiting for him so he get hurt next year? I mean, it's like at some point, reliability is as important as durability.
Like I said to you, they're saving him for the Olympics so we can go ahead and get that gold medal, Team USA in Paris later on this summer. All the old guys, Kawhi allegedly is playing the Olympics as well. I'll believe that when I see it later this summer. But that does it for this version of the Lombardi Line. Thank you to Michael Lombardi, for our producer Stephanie Kamerschak, and the entire crew behind the glass. I'm Femi Abebefe saying good luck with all the bets. Michael, enjoy the basketball today. The Handle with Matt Brown and Mike Somich is coming up next here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.